Hello, this is Chris Nelson from evolveconsciousness.org. I'll be doing another presentation. This one will be on reality processing. It will deal with infographics that I've already presented as well as new ones. There will be about 15 new infographics as well as secondary previous infographics that I've done that I will tie into them. So there'll be one infographic 1 and then 1B, and for instance, infographic 15 and then 15B, C, D, E for to represent the old work I've done, to relate it to the old work and the new work. So this will be on reality processing. I've already done some work on it, some infographics specifically titled Reality Processing, I believe, or Reality versus Perception, and also on the work on the trivium and metaphysics, on how we receive the data from reality and then form perceptions and conceptions. It will be dealing with all that previous work on how to better understand how we process reality. So I'll start with image 1B, which is an infographic I've previously done on speaking truth into existence. This was infographic number 4 from that presentation, just to demonstrate how we are affected by what other people say, and this allows us to change ourselves, or we can affect other people, and that allows them, or it helps them, it acts as a catalyst for them to change themselves. Infographic number 1 shows how a person can act in that capacity, but also a data disk or a book or a movie or any source of info that is input for us to receive has an effect and influence upon us. So it doesn't matter what it is, it has an influence and effect upon us if we are able to perceive it and process it as part of reality. But we need to ask, is it true? Do you believe it is true and real? Do you know it is true and real? How do you know? How do you know something is true and real as a knowing, a real knowing, versus simply a belief that it is true and real? So verify accuracy in reality. Is it reflected in reality? How do you process what is in reality? So that's the importance of this little presentation. It'll summarize the previous work on verifying accuracy in reality. Is it reflected in reality, which is the importance of being grounded in reality so that all the universals that you conceive of are ultimately derived from verifiable validations in the particulars of reality, so that you have an unbroken chain from the grounding in reality up to the higher order abstract conceptual universals that you derive. Or else you can, if you don't have that chain, then you can simply imagine and derive any abstract conceptual universal. Infographic number 2. So, when we're talking about verifying what we believe or what we know in order to determine if it's an actual knowing or if it's merely a belief, we can come to understand that there's two types of beliefs. A belief in a speculation of a possibility of a truth and a belief as truth. So a speculative belief is what I consider a healthy belief because it's a belief as what is not currently known to be true or false in reality. It's possible or probable, or it can simply be pure imagination. But you don't know if it's real or unreal, true or false. There's no attachment, loyalty, or trust to this type of belief. You're not bound to it. You're not bound to that belief in an attachment of loyalty, trust and faith in it being true. You're not bound to it being true because you recognize it as a speculative belief and it's not a known truth. The other form of belief is belief as truth. And this is where you have belief as a trust, loyalty, and faith in it being true and real. You're attached and bound to it by a loyalty, a trust, and a faith that it is real despite not being demonstrable. So you're not grounding in reality. There's no chain of verification to the particulars to actually demonstrate this concept or belief you have. So you simply have loyalty, trust, and faith that it is true and real. So you become attached and bound to it. And that means you're not seeing reality properly. When you become attached and bound to something as being true, even though it's not demonstrable as true, you're simply believing it to be true. So there's belief as a healthy speculation in order to find truth, and there's belief as truth, where you take it as truth, as a known truth when it isn't. So I've developed a visual flowchart graph to demonstrate how this works. So in the actual, real, true existing existence of the objective universe, that's one side, as I've demonstrated in my recent work on consciousness and causality. From there, I play it into a dualistic conceptual framework for understanding reality as ourselves, the self, and reality, the world, self and the world, internal and external. So we have existence and consciousness. Those are the two things that play: the primacy of existence and the power of consciousness to affect and influence that existence. And that existence affects and influences us as consciousness. So it's a reciprocal wheel. It's in and out. That's what much of my work talks about. So you have the potential, the unreal, the consciousness, the subjective multiverse, as opposed to existence of the objective universe, one thing. Multiverse, you can create many multiverses in your mind, in your consciousness. An example is all the TVs and movies. Those are multiverses in someone's consciousness that they then manifest and create a fictional reality in reality, and that's movies and television. So we have the potential, unreal, fantasy, imagination, the consciousness, and the subjective multiverse. So this is the potential. We can imagine something from our fantasy imagination that is unreal, that has a potential for being real, maybe, or maybe it has a potential to never be real. So from consciousness and the subjective multiverse, of that potential unreal, we can then go into a belief that is unknown. It's unknown. It's a belief. You don't know if it's true or false. It could be possible and it could be probable, but it's a belief. So from the potential into the possible or probable, as a belief, as an unknown. And this is where discovery and invention is. This is the healthy speculative belief of discovery and invention, where you envision, you create something in the fantasy imagination of the unreal potential in the subjective multiverse of consciousness. And in there, you can then verify that universal to see if it's applicable in any particulars in reality, to see if it's actually true. And then you can discover and invent things in actual, real, true existence in the objective universe, where you can then invent a fork or a computer or an airplane, whatever you want. So the belief as a possible unknown leads you in discovery and invention towards a probable and then towards an actual. So this is the four-way split that I've been trying to demonstrate since last year in 2014 with the chart of processing reality versus perceptions, where at the end you have either you're accepting it uncritically as belief, you're accepting it as a reality because that's what it is, as an actual, you accept it as a probable, you accept it as a possible, or you accept it as a potential, or in terms of engaging in cognitive dissonance, you accept or reject it uncritically, not based on it seeming to appear to make sense as just accepting it on a belief, but you have validations of a cognitive dissonance valuation to determine whether you accept or reject something. So I'll show a quick preview a quick flash of that infographic later. I think it's in the 15 or 13. And anyways, that's in other infographic presentations that I have done on... you can go look into it in my site, Reality versus Perception, and you should find it. It's a big flowchart. Infographic 2B is one that I've already done. This one deals with attachments to beliefs. So if you're not familiar with it, you can just go through it yourself, or you can go through that presentation. I believe it was Grounding in Reality, or no, it's the one right after, Symbols, Reality, Understanding, Belief, and Attachment, something like that. It's Symbols, Belief, and Attachment. There's five words in it. And this is where I presented this infographic. So I'm not going to go over it again. It just deals with how our beliefs lead to attachments, which blind us to an objective detachment way of viewing reality honestly for what it is. Infographic number three. This is where we are slave to our beliefs. So if you can't verify something yourself, you believe what someone else says as the truth, and you're bound to what they say or said. So you have your blind belief, where you have trust and faith in your doctors and your lawyers and the politicians and the government and the corporations and many, many other things. So you become a slave to their choices for you to live by blindly accepting their alleged knowledge as the only option. This is where you're restricted in life by belief in their authority and responsibility of your life. So you're not verifying what they're saying, these doctors, lawyers, politicians, government, and corporations. You're just believing what they say and allowing that knowledge that they give you to be blindly accepted in order for you to make choices and live by in your life. So this isn't true higher order consciousness of an even higher order kind. Yes, we have as humans higher order consciousness compared to non-human animals, but within the higher order consciousness capacity of humans, there's lower order and higher order consciousness within our own higher order consciousness. So this is not higher order consciousness living. This is pretty much stimulus response living, where you're fed what to do and then you do it. You're responding from the stimulus that you're provided. You're not engaging in a processing and an understanding of reality properly. The whole justice and legal system is run as a foreign entity where we are only fed the output they want us to know and accept. The true why is elusive and hidden to us, meaning we are operating on an input-output stimulus-response capacity without the processing to self-determine what is actually occurring. We blindly accept the authority and rule of society by a group of people who all agree on the same schema for living. So the same model, the same plan for living, all agreed upon. They create and modify systems of living while we simply accept it all as valid and the only way things can be. We are powerless outside viewers of our own ways of living, stuck in systems run by others. We don't have access to evidence, testimony, etc. of any crime that happens. We are simply observers of whatever information they choose to provide us with. So yes, a crime happens, you're told about it, and then you believe it. But did it happen or not? So most of the time we just accept it, and then things like 9/11 happen, and they just tell us this happened, and everyone just accepts it, even though there's evidence to contradict that story. That is the whole, the same schema, the same plan, the same story, the same narrative that everyone agrees with. We can't oftentimes contradict it because we don't have access to the evidence. But on a big story, well, there is evidence, and we do get access to it even in a tertiary capacity. But the evidence was provided visually or in some other form, and there's contradictions, there's things that don't make sense. So we can see that the reality that's attempted to be created for us, the schema for living, with respect to 9/11 and other stories, it doesn't make sense. The reality does not add up. Infographic number 4, we have a body of knowledge on an idea. So you have a belief, a concept, an idea, and there's a body of knowledge associated with that idea. So the thing about a body of knowledge is you can have a body of knowledge on an idea, but the body of knowledge doesn't have to actually be represented in reality. It can simply be a body of knowledge that's invented from consciousness in order to support an idea, but it's just an invented imaginary body of knowledge, but it still is a body of knowledge for that idea. So if you want to communicate about an idea with someone, you need to communicate a body of knowledge about the idea in order for someone to understand what you're trying to talk about. But it does not necessitate that that body of knowledge is actually reflected in reality. It can simply be a body of knowledge on an idea, which is a complete fantasy invention. So I just want to mention that because I don't think I mentioned it in this infographic. So an idea can exist on two levels, in reality and or the mind. Just like being. Being can exist in reality, things that actually are, or you can have an idea that is being generated and created and sustained in your consciousness. So it exists. There's existence in two levels. Either it actually does exist in the objective universe, or it exists in your subjective multiverse. As right now, you're conceiving of something, so it exists in the conceptual capacity of your consciousness, but it doesn't exist in reality. So you can argue for two types of existence, but there's only one real existence, and that's in reality. The subjective multiverse is not a real existence. Just making that distinction clear. So one is an idea in reality. It exists in the objective universe. It reflects existence in reality. A truth of reality represented by a body of knowledge. So it's a truth in reality that has a body of knowledge. The body of knowledge has a line, has a cord attaching it to grounding in reality. Now you can have an idea in the mind, the second type. It exists in the multiverse of consciousness, and it is not necessarily existent in objective universe as truth. It can simply be a body of knowledge that you keep adding on and abstracting into that isn't in reality. So the power of consciousness to manifest new inner realities, the multiverse possibility, and affect the outer reality, the universe actuality. This is what we're talking about. This is what my work is about, is the power of consciousness to affect the primacy of existence. That's what this is about, is the idea in mind, and you can bring it into as an idea in reality, even if it doesn't exist. So at one point, cars didn't exist in reality. So you had the idea in mind, and then the idea is actually manifested as an existent in reality. It's represented in reality. So that's the power we have as gods in our apotheosis, in our self-transformation. We can become great powers of generation, creation, and manifestation in reality as the quote gods that we are. That's what consciousness is we are consciousness, we are the God, everything about God comes from consciousness through the power of ideas in the mind of abstraction, and we try to invent these answers to reality, to origins, to our past, to meaning, purpose, value in life and about the universe and creation, and it all comes from us. So anyways, this is the power we actually have to manifest new inner realities and affect outer reality. An idea taken from consciousness and brought into existence. So I have some examples of this, is some things that are manifested. You have a tree, you have a house, and you have government. But what are these things manifested by? So the tree is not manifested by anything other than nature. It's not in our control to manifest it, or we can plant seeds and things, but they existed before us. So it's from nature. A house didn't exist in nature. A house is created by humans. It's the same for government. Government was created by humans. So when you're taking an idea from consciousness and bringing it into existence, you can manifest things, you can create them. But you can't unmanifest everything. You can unmanifest what you create as a human, but you can't unmanifest what nature creates. You can't unmanifest a tree. It exists in reality, and it's not from consciousness. But you can unmanifest a house or government. It exists as a construct in reality from consciousness. So a house is something we create in reality. It's made of plastic and wood and metal and all these other things. But we can take them apart one by one, just like we put them together one by one. One part on top of another made a house. We can take one part apart, each part apart, each piece apart, and end up with no house and just a bunch of pieces. You can't do that with a tree. A tree is not created by you, a human. It's created by nature. Just like your body. You can't disassemble a body, a human body, into parts. It's a product of nature, not a product. It's a product of existence, a product of reality. It's not a product of human consciousness. The human body is not a product of human consciousness. It's a product of nature. You can't unmanifest it. So you can unmanifest a house because humans created it. You can unmanifest a government because humans created government. Government does exist. It does not exist as a house exists, but it exists as a way of living because we have chosen to live in this way through our behaviors and actions, to create this abstraction from consciousness and bring it into existence as a way of living. So government does exist. Sorry, everyone out there, all you truther speakers, all you popular people talking about how government doesn't exist and everyone just laps it up and keeps repeating these memes that government doesn't exist. Well, I'm telling you, government does exist, and you have to understand how it does exist, because we create it into existence. Similarly, concepts like truth, that's a conceptual understanding. Truth as a concept, it's a word. It's a five-letter word that we invented and created, and it doesn't exist itself. There is no object of truth. Truth is a concept to encapsulate everything in existence under one label called truth, or reality, or existence, that they exist, that it's true. But truth itself is a concept. It doesn't exist. Government is a concept. It doesn't exist. But we bring it into existence, and we make it a way of living. Government exists. There's many things. Love, truth, many abstract things don't exist in themselves in reality, but government is something that we actually do manifest and create. So people need to put an end to this nonsense that, oh, government doesn't exist. Yes, it does exist. Infographic number 5, just recalling symbols and how symbols work. There are many layers of knowledge expressed within symbolic imagery. So you have a story, a narrative, even a painting, an image, even a symbol or a sigil, a symbol with many symbols. You have many layers. So it's like an onion. You have one symbol, and then the deeper you get or the further out you get, depending which way you want to go, well, there's more layers to it. So you can look at it as concentric circles in a ring. Concentric circles in a ring that compound within each other, or you have circles that become visible after you open it up like an accordion or a slinky, and then you see that it's not just one layer. There's not just an exoteric, there's an esoteric layer 1, esoteric layer 2, esoteric layer 3, esoteric layer 4. There's different layers of expressing certain knowledge within symbolic imagery. Layers of meaning within symbolism can express realities and unrealities. So a symbol, tying into how an idea can be in reality and simply in consciousness, you can have a symbol and the meaning and the layers of meaning, they can express something in reality, but it can also express something that's purely fantasy and imagination, and it's not reflected in reality. So symbols work the same way. They're just a reflection of our attempts from consciousness to explain aspects of reality and ourselves, which I've gone into in my previous work on symbolism to explain this. Images are held in imagination. Images and ideas are held in consciousness to create a multiverse subjective reality level 2. Reality, I'll be getting into this into the next presentation on the truth levels and the reality levels and how to process reality even more. So this is a, I had originally done these 15 images and related images all over the place in like a 70 image presentation. But then I realized I could make it more simple by taking that out, making it its own intro presentation on reality processing, and then go with all the other stuff that was more related, as opposed to this, which was more with just with knowledge and processing reality. So images and ideas are not automatically actual reality. Just because you think of something as an idea in consciousness does not make it a reality in existence. So the layers of meaning within symbolism can express realities or unrealities. It doesn't automatically make it a reality in the world just because you can conceive of some idea or conception in your consciousness based on imagery or a story someone told or something, and you come up with some intuited or inducted conception about reality or yourself. It doesn't mean that it's real, that it's actually in reality. So these things that we envision are not automatically actual reality. They can be mirage, illusory reflections that we create internally and project externally. So if you've been following my work on symbolism, this is what we do with symbolism, is we create symbolism to reflect ourselves internally and project it externally, and also aspects of ourselves we create into unrealities, into ideas and images that aren't actually in reality, but we project them, we reify them, and objectify them as their own existence outside of ourselves in order to make it more concrete and real as a real truth, as opposed to simply a belief in our consciousness that does not exist as an objective real truth. So we do that over and over. We try to take things that we envision. I'll just say it, God is one of them. You envision it in your consciousness, and then you project it outwards in order to try to make it more real. But all it is your attempt to try to make sense of reality, of yourself, of purpose, meaning, and value, of origins, of creation, many, many things, of the questions to alleviate the doubt, the uncertainty, the insecurity, the discomfort from the questions that are asked about all these important things of meaning, purpose, and value in life. So I'll just leave that there and go on to the next infographic. Infographic number 6 is something I tried to express from what I was conceiving of in relation to truth and belief and a body of knowledge. So I call this the truth boundary, as where you have, as I'll be explaining, as I said, these were made as I was making the other infographics, so it has information that I've already talked about in other presentations, as well as information that I'll be delving more in depth in the next presentation, of which this infographic and other ones are extracted from. So truth level 1 is the boundary of what is as truth in reality. So imagine that as one circle, everything in existence, and then you have bodies of knowledge that you as consciousness create or share with other people. So those, that body of knowledge can consist of beliefs in what is real and unreal. So your body of knowledge can have belief of fantasy, and it can have truth of reality as what actually is in reality. So our bodies of knowledge expand. That's the outward arrows in the expansion of the body of knowledge. It goes outwards into the truth level 1, and also into a belief in what is real and unreal. So we take in while we expand. So we're expanding outwards, yet we take in things in the belief in real and unreal. We take in things from what is truth level 1 in actual reality. So things that actually exist, things that don't exist from our consciousness, we take them in and we create bodies of knowledge. The knowledge might be positive or negative knowledge, actual for our betterment or not, and it might be real knowledge in reality, and it might be fake knowledge that doesn't exist, or it might be knowledge that we envision in consciousness that isn't yet discovered in reality, and we're going to try to discover it as an actual reality in truth level one. So take it from the belief in the real and unreal from one circle and bring it into truth level one. So we have this crossover between the two, our body of knowledge in the purple between the red and the blue. So we have the possibility of discovery outside the current knowns. So currently what we know as our body of knowledge, that's a limited data set in terms of the known and unknowns of the totality of truth level one in the boundary of what is an existence. So as we're expanding to uncover more of that, that's where we have the possibility of discovery outside our current knowns. So we have to expand our body of knowledge. We're going to expand it towards the truth level one, but we're also going to be expanding and taking in from the beliefs, both beliefs in things that are real and beliefs in things that are unreal. We're stretching towards and understanding more. Stretch towards understanding more and include it as knowledge. So you can understand falsities as knowledge and think that they're real. So you have to ask, is it true? So you're taking in these things and including it as knowledge, but is it true? Belief is not truth. So you can, when you take in a belief, it can be something real. Eventually you'll discover it as a reality. As the previous infographics I've been saying, from the potential to the possible to the probable to the actual, and this is the inquiry, the questioning, the learning. Well, you're going to take it in as knowledge, but is it true? So belief is not simply true. You need to verify it. That's what the whole problem is. We need to verify these things we take as beliefs to determine if they're actually truth, which many people are not doing, which is why I'm doing these presentations, because this is a huge problem, is we're not verifying the things that other people influence us and affect us with, all this information that other people speak to us, or from a disc, or from a video, or from an audio, or from a book, and we're just accepting it. And this is the problem we've had for thousands of years, is this failure to distinguish. Once we have a conception of what is true, you need to distinguish within your own consciousness how you are determining really the solid truth of reality versus what you believe to be the solid truth of reality. There is a difference, and it's important to distinguish the two. Infographic number 7, this is layers of comprehension. So this is again where I'm trying to explain the layers of symbolism and how we understand them and how this relates to our own layers of comprehension when we're trying to conceive of reality. We have ourself here at the bottom in consciousness, and we have reality and existence at the top. But between the two, between ourselves as consciousness and awareness and the reality of existence that is, there's many layers of knowledge, of constructs, of concepts and ideas that we create to help us make sense and understand and navigate reality. So we have our inner vision, the constructs from the reception, perception, and inception from reality. We receive and perceive and inception, inceive, I don't know, I was trying to think of the word for that. So we have the reception, perception, and inception from reality through which we derive conceptions from our imagination and ideas as layers of understanding what is happening in reality. So you have different layers of understanding, and they should all merge together to allow a clear vision in reality. But what happens when above or below you, you have more dark or cloudy layers of comprehension is that will affect your overall understanding of reality, your overall comprehension of reality. So inaccurate layers above or below prevent accurate assessment, diagnosis, judgment, evaluation, understanding of reality. The lens, the vision, the sight of consciousness is cloudy, dirty, confused, unclear from missing or false information. It alters how we view all of reality, things as they are, and possibilities of how they should be. So if you don't see reality clearly, you're not seeing things as they are clearly, and if you're not seeing things as they are clearly, then the possibilities of how things should be will also be clouded and altered. So these are like lenses warping the image. Beliefs are shots in the dark, and sometimes outright false, like illusions. So this is also intuition. They can be shots in the dark, and sometimes they can be outright false. They're not automatically true. So between you as a blank slate and reality as a blank, what it is, there are layers of understanding, true or false, that shape how we see things in reality. So there's you as a blank slate. When you're born, you're a blank slate of nothing. And then there's reality that is. You have to intake from reality and then develop a sense of self, an ego personality identity construct, a sense of reality, a worldview, self-image, image of the world. So a self in reality, self is in reality, and consciousness is clear or confused with what is in reality, and that creates a self that is truer or falser. So how does the true self or false self get created? Well, when you're creating yourself, which is in reality, your consciousness is clear or confused about what is in reality and about yourself. So that creates yourself. You view reality and then yourself in reality, and that helps you create your image of yourself and who you will be, your personality, how you act, and everything. And based on how accurate you see reality, that creates a truer self. But since we all see reality falsely and less accurately, we're all falser selves as opposed to truer selves that we can potentially be. So if you want more work on that, there's substance versus appearances. True self versus false self is a theme, a model, a framework, a dual framework that I've constantly been playing on and trying to elucidate and bring greater understanding upon. Infographic number 8 is limited perceptions. So we're talking about perceiving reality and not having a proper perception of reality in ourselves and creating truer or falser selves and affecting the quality of our lives and living realer or falser lives or unrealer lives. So we have a vast reality. So this is out of place with other work to explain map and territory, truth level 1, truth level 2. This is an infographic I had made after other ones. So it's out of place in terms of the development of the infographics as I have made them. But anyways, you have the territory of reality. It's vast reality. Everything, the unknowns yet to be known. So dot, dot, dot in one direction or the other. We can presume it's infinite or not. It's a theoretical limit to the universe, to what can be known. Maybe it's infinite, whatever. Maybe it's an infinite regress. Maybe it's an infinite progress. Who knows how it works? There's many possibilities. So we have this big everything, unknowns yet to be known, and some knowns that we do know. So we have our limited perception compared to the vast reality, where there's everything. In our perception, all we have is the map of the territory. This is how the map and the territory diverge. The map isn't the whole territory. So we have our limited perception. That is to say, not 100% of everything. So you have gaps and holes in the map versus the territory, which is absolutely everything. Your map can't have absolutely everything. It's a limited data set representation of the absoluteness of everything. We can't know everything there is in existence, reality, the universe. Reality, universe, and existence is almost, quote, infinite relative to our finite knowledge. So even if the universe is finite, compared to our own finite capacity to know things, the infinite, the universe can be viewed as infinite relative to our finite capacity, because even the universe's finite capacity is many, many orders of magnitude over our own finite capacity for knowledge. So you can view it in that way, through the comparison to ourselves, as it being infinite, even if it is finite. It's so immense that it's essentially infinite for us. Okay, so we have gaps and voids in the abysses, incomprehension of the pieces we have accumulated in our map, what we've put together from the territory. There's gaps, voids, and abysses in the comprehension of pieces. And this can have us create and imagine fillers to make things smooth and whole, to make a cohesive surface appearance for our worldview. And now we are at infographic number 9, which is filling in the perceptions. So the gaps that we once had, now we have a filler perception of our map of the territory. We were missing pieces from a cohesive reality map. Before, the reality map wasn't cohesive, it wasn't whole. It was imagine trying to drive over a bridge with all those holes, it wouldn't be very safe. So in order to make things safer, to make things more secure, more comfortable, less insecure, less unsafe, less uncomforting, whatever, less doubting, to have more of a secure, safe answer, well, we fill in those holes, those gaps, those abysses in consciousness, in our conceptual frameworks, in our ideas, in our beliefs. We fill in those holes, and now instead of having a belief that, now instead of having a perception of reality, a map that has some unknowns, some abysses, some holes in knowledge that you don't know and understand reality, that might make you feel insecure, uncomfortable, in doubt of that insecurity and discomfort from that abyss in the unknown. And you can have anxiety and stress from not having an answer, and you need to have an answer. So when we create, when we accept beliefs, we're creating a cohesive reality map. We're filling in we're filling in the gaps and the abysses of not knowing things about reality in our map of the territory. We're filling it in and making it smooth with the belief, so that we create a nice smooth surface that makes us feel nice, safe, and secure, comfortable. There's not the nagging, the hole in the gap, the abyss of those questions we don't have an answer to, that provide us with meaning, purpose, and value in our lives. So if you don't have that answer and you have that gap, well, then you don't have that meaning, purpose, and value in your life. Okay, I've talked about this psychological aspect in grounding in reality and symbols, reality, beliefs, and attachment. In other work after that and before that, probably some of it after that. In the four symbols and consciousness, four parts that I wrote up, all of this I have been talking about. So I'm trying continually to bring it back up to try to make sense of how we derive symbols. It's an attempt to reflect reality and an understanding of reality and ourselves through the abstraction of symbols. And we can get mixed up in that attempt to explain actual things in reality or about ourselves, and we can invent symbols that don't reflect anything, that reflect unrealities. So when people influence us with symbols, or we accept symbols, Well, we can take those unrealities and fill them into our gaps in our attempt to make sense of reality, and then our map of reality has filler pieces of unreality. But it's all because we're trying to make sense of reality, and we created symbols and we created imagery and we anthropomorphized, personified, and projected outside of ourselves to try to make sense of ourselves, because it's all internal. And to try to make more sense of it, to make it more objective, is you make it something outside of your own consciousness. Rather than in your multiverse, you make it part of the universe. So it's all trying to make it concrete and real. So I've gone into this work before, and this ties into that. This whole attempt to make things smooth in our comprehension, the fear of the unknown, of not knowing things, of wanting things to be known. So please do check out my old work. This, not the older work from 2014, but the work that I have begun at the end of 2014, beginning of 2015 on symbolism and consciousness. This is a whole education that I have come about through seeing how other people express their understanding, through seeing errors in my own understanding and other people's understanding. That's why I wrote, "Thanks for your errors, because your errors allow me to see my own errors." It's more easy to see errors in someone else than in yourself. So I was able to see by people's conceptual frameworks of how they conceived of themselves in reality, the errors in their framework. So it started off with morality and natural law, the term natural law, and how it had some issues with it and the conception of it, and it should be, and the confusion between just a natural law and a natural moral law, and then the confusion between the ridiculousness of how karma operates. And I've always had issues of the conception of the soul, and all these things started to tie together, and then I started questioning more and doubting more, rather than simply accepting the influence that I've been affected by people like Mark Passio and others, rather than just accepting the information that sounded good and it made sense based on all the other information as a tapestry weaved together as a whole block. Taking it all together, it makes sense. But when you start to look at it individually, individually to see if those individual parts actually do sustain each other as a truth, or if they're simply sustaining each other as an ungrounded belief. So a lot of the things I've discovered are beliefs, and they're not verifiable as truth. They can't be demonstrated. They're only conceptual abstractions to attempt to demonstrate a truth, but it isn't necessarily a truth. So this is where I've gotten into my work in symbolism and consciousness and how to accurately process reality. It's all tied in together from last year's work into this year's work. So please do go look at my corrected work this year that's reformulating my previous work. It doesn't invalidate it. All my previous work is valid. It's just the way I talked about it, the symbolic reference, is what needs to be corrected. So my previous work is still valid. Just want to mention that. So if you fill in your gap of reality with belief as truth and reality, then you build a foundation of negative knowledge that is hard to take out. Trying to remove a belief someone has implanted into their foundation for reality, the worldview, or their foundation for self, which is the self-image, the ego personality identity, is like trying to take a jackhammer to their foundation for understanding reality. It's like destroying their own sense of self and their sense of reality when you're trying to remove a belief someone has implanted and ingrained as a mind virus into the depths of their psyche and their consciousness. It becomes a part of who they are, and they desperately are attached to it. They are bound to that belief because they have trust, faith, and loyalty in that belief being reality and true. Even though it's only a belief, and they've stuck it so far into their consciousness and probably made it a part of their worldview, the image of the world and the image of self, their ego personality identity construct, how they view themselves and how they function in reality, that they cannot let go of it. So the next few images are previous work that I've done that you can go through these infographics on your own to read to have an additional understanding, or go through the presentations that they're associated with. So 9B foundations, this is the core foundational principles of truth as a basis for living, how we have both positive and negative knowledge that creates our foundational axioms for what drives us in life, and then we create secondary constructs for understanding. So this is just a model, an infographic I made to try to represent that. And that's in Foundational Living and True Unity, in that presentation if you're interested. 9C, this is from not Metaphysics, Language, and Reality, but one of the precursor articles that I did with infographics. I think this is from Words, Reality, and Proportions. So Words, Reality, and Proportions for an explanation on this. This is how we can go from looking at the trees to seeing the forest, or the forest to the trees, from the particular to the universal, universal to particular. Deals with lower and higher order and abstractions. So please check out that presentation if you are interested. The next one is also a solo infographic I made for senses for the input of reality, not technology. So that's a short little article you can go look up. So it's just the correspondence of info from our awareness, where we have awareness of data in reality, and different pieces are separately isolated packets that lack correspondence and limited in scope of applicability, where you're not connecting them. They only apply in the scope of where they apply. But if you have a correspondence and more definition, detail, and clarity, then you develop more understanding as a result and less limitation, where the scope of applicability of the things interconnect and they allow you to see even more and more and more of reality. And the next one is, this is a recent presentation, an infographic from a recent presentation I did a few months ago on truth, reality, perception, and dualism, I think. So you can get a more in-depth in-depth explanation from this infographic from that presentation I just mentioned. This is where we have a house of cards, floating beliefs that if you take destroy the worldview or destroy the person's self-image, take a jackhammer to it. When you shatter their reality, it's a hard fall. It hurts when they fall back down to the grounding of reality. If you are even able to shatter that house of cards, those illusions that they use to create a sense of self, versus if you have more of a grounding in reality where you recognize the distinction between truth and belief, where you're only grounding yourself in reality of truth, even though you may have beliefs, like those two interconnected beliefs, which are not connected anywhere in reality, if those two beliefs are destroyed and found to be false, well, you're just going to land back on some of your higher order understandings of reality. You're not falling all the way back down to the grounding in reality. It's less of a high fall, it hurts less, because you have a more structured, sound, grounded understanding of reality. So you can check out that infographic from that presentation, Truth, Reality, Perceptions, and Dualism. Infographic 10, I will just introduce with infographic 10B, which is Care for Truth, an infographic I've done last year. This is just to show the dichotomy between an apathy for truth living and a care for truth living. Of notice, you can go get a more in-depth explanation on this infographic in consciousness presentation I did at the beginning of 2015, I think. It was all the infographics I did from last year that I never actually presented in audio. That I took all those infographics, 10 or so, and I did two presentations on them. So one's on natural law and one's on consciousness. The one after the other, you can find them fairly easily, or look for Care for Truth on my site. It'll take you to the infographic on Care for Truth, of which I've attached the video for the explanation on the Care for Truth infographic. So what to take note of in this infographic for the infographic 10 is the Care for Truth cycle of knowledge. So knowledge to understanding to wisdom. Seeking truth to accepting truth to embodying that truth and becoming it to live it as right action, and then you can share it and speak it and preach it with other people. And this is the Care for Truth to empower ourselves. And there's also another infographic, Empowering Change, which deals with many aspects of knowledge and understanding, to care, to enact it, and then back to knowledge and understanding and different levels of empowerment. So you can take a look at that if you would like to get a deeper understanding of all this reality processing stuff I'm talking about, because I'm not going over my older work as that would take too much time. So if you want more information to understand how everything connects, do go look at my older work and see how it connects to this work, and you'll have a more of an understanding of all my work together and how that helps us to perceive, conceive, understand, and navigate reality. So infographic number 10, this one deals with a similar process. So of course, before you get to knowledge, understanding, and wisdom, you have to input from reality. So this is tying into other infographics, which I will be showing after the next one, in terms of creating symbols from reality. You'll see how it ties in. It's the previous infographics that I've done on metaphysics, language, and reality. So we have reality, and it leads us to perceptions. And this is through the senses to grasp reality. You use your senses to grasp reality. So from reality to perception through the senses. So in our perceptions, we have inner and outer perceptions. But the first part is when you're sourcing from reality, those are our outer percepts. They're coming externally, outer perceptions. They're the outer perceptions and vision from our senses. So that's the outer perceptions, the first part. So from those outer perceptions, we develop a basic level one knowledge, which is sourced from our perceptions. So the level one knowledge, basic knowledge, is sourced from perceptions, and those perceptions are sourced from reality. Or those perceptions are sourced from our senses, which are sourced from reality. First there's reality, then there's the senses, then there's the perceptions, then we get to knowledge level one. So this is more of a distinction on some previous work. If you're familiar with my work on the metaphysics, language, and reality, and how we create symbols, how we perceive symbols, some of this will be familiar to you, just presented in a different way. It's tying that in, as well as the Care for Truth terminology somewhat that I previously just showed. So from knowledge level one, sourced from perceptions, you can get an even deeper understanding of reality, of those bare perceptual knowledge aspects. So it's just basic knowledge. Then you process many pieces of awareness of reality, as I shown in the previous infographic on correspondence of info. Those previous pieces of knowledge, you can correspond them, and it can bring you to greater heights, greater levels of understanding, greater clarity. And that understanding is sourced from knowledge level one, which is sourced from perceptions, which are the outer perceptions, which is sourced from the senses or reality. So you see how it's a chain of events. This is how we conceive of reality, which is why in my layers of comprehension, I was saying there's the blank slate of consciousness of self, and we have to recognize reality and ourselves in reality in order to gain knowledge of reality and knowledge of ourselves in reality. So this knowledge leads to understanding, and this understanding is the second type of perception, which is an inner perception, an inner vision. And this is knowledge level two. It's not simply knowledge from our percepts of a tree of green, of a square, of round, of these basic things in reality, of our outer vision, the outer percepts sourced from reality. Now we're in understanding, and we're deriving a secondary level, a higher abstracted level of knowledge from that first level knowledge of reality. And we're developing greater and greater understanding and greater comprehension through the inner vision of our consciousness, this sixth sense of consciousness. The outer vision and the inner vision play off of each other, but the inner vision is the more abstract and powerful one derived from the outer vision. So if you don't have an outer vision, you're not going to have an inner vision. You need percepts from reality. You need auditory if you're blind, or if you can't hear, then you need to see. If you need to touch, you need something. You need your five senses. If you don't have your five senses, you're not going to survive other than through basic biological processing, where someone feeds you with a spoon and your body automatically processes it. You wouldn't have an understanding of yourself, of reality, because they don't exist. Without your senses, there is no existence, essentially. Try to do a thought experiment on that. You'll see. So reality affects. We have a causal stimulus from reality that affects us. And then our senses produce percepts. That's the order. The first causal stimulus, in order for our consciousness to get into motion, in order for it to engage in the causal development of processing and understanding why of reality, the logic processing and understanding of the why of reality, and the reality itself is the what, who, what, where, when. Reality affects us as a causal stimulus to influence us, and then our senses produce percepts, which allow us to gain knowledge and then understanding from that knowledge. So there's always a causal stimulus from reality, not an intermediate agent pretending to be reality. It's always reality that is affecting us. If someone else is in reality, then they are affecting us. There's not an intermediary, pseudo-reality, middle ground reality that's between reality and you perceiving it. There's no intermediate agent. There's not some invisible, philosophical, postmodernist, whatever bullshit excuse you want to come up with. It's reality and you. Everything that you receive comes from reality. It's a stimulus from reality. It's a causal stimulus from reality. There's not an intermediate agent pretending to be reality, as many philosophical models of bullshit attempt to demonstrate. Well, oh, well, there's reality, and then there's your perceptions, and then there's the image in your mind. No, it's reality, and then it's you. There's no intermediate agent, where so many bad philosophies want to try to confuse things. All of this is part of you. Perceptions are part of you. Knowledge is part of you. Understanding is part of you. So when you want to say, oh, well, you don't have direct access to reality. I don't remember the exact excuses, but people who are familiar with this will understand what I'm talking about. They want to say that it's not just you in reality. There's all your senses are in the way, and your senses are illusory, and your senses are the problem. Your senses are going to get you in trouble. No, the senses are the only thing for input in reality. There isn't an intermediary thing between reality and your senses, or your senses and you. It's all reality, of which you are a part of, and then it's you. Stop putting something in between. That's how you screw yourself over and get confused. Next infographic is 11. This is also reality processing. I developed these one after the other. Just a different way of expressing it. So there's two major aspects. One is an automatic causal input stimulus, and the other is a voluntary processing to understand what was automatically input as a causal stimulus. So the automatic causal input stimulus objectively is. It's, quote, the absolute. It comes in and you can't change it, right? It's what's in reality. It comes in and it objectively is. So this corresponds to existence, to our senses, and to our percepts. You can't change that event. Existence comes to the senses, and then you see, you perceive whatever your senses produce. So it could be accurate or false, as we have here an example, a pole and water. Then you have your sight, and then your percept is telling you that you're seeing the pole bend, even though the pole does not bend. So this is only your outer perception. This is only producing that first knowledge level one, where you're seeing a pole bend. Knowledge level one. But the pole is not bending. Okay? So the automatic causal input stimulus, the objective is the absoluteness of reality. This is what happens. You put a pole in water, it bends. That's what it looks like. This is the way it works. But it's only an outer perception. Now, the voluntary processing to understand, this is where the power of consciousness comes in to better understand or alter and affect the primacy of existence. The subjectively referenced relative, as opposed to the objectively is absolute. Objectively is, it is, whether you're looking at it or not, that's the way it is. But the voluntary processing is a subjective reference, hence it's relative. If you're subjectively referencing things in reality based on your ability and consciousness versus someone's else's ability and consciousness, which might be different, it might have less of an ability to reference things, to analyze things in their relative capacity. Well, you're recognizing the previous reality and concepts relative to now. What was before relative to now?